Chat. You always on chat.
Can I steal his last chat or what?
You're just waiting.
Okay, so in this talk, I'll discuss these models of chameleon field theories, which in many levels are similar to quantitatively to what Maxime talked about. So this is work that's appeared a few years ago in collaboration with Linda Beltman, who's a student at Columbia. Two papers in 2004. And also with Stephen Kopster at Princeton, and as a former student of Princeton, I'm older by me. So basically, the motivation for these models is to somehow decouple or disentangle local constraints on variations of parameters, or equivalence principle violations, or tests of the inverse square law, with the cosmological constraints. And that's a useful thing to do because
maybe you can use this black voice for
So that's useful to do because these local constraints are much tighter. And so, you know, as Maxim was indicating in his talk, the we can free up a lot of rooms for things to vary cosmologically if we can decouple these two things. And so let me give you an example of why it's useful to make this decoupling. Okay. So if you have, suppose we measure something as time evolving, like for example, future observations show that the equation of state of the dark energy is not exactly minus one, but minus 0.9 or something like that. Then it's useful to parameterize this, or we would think that this should be probably driven by some kind of quintessence or scalar field. And so, such a scalar field, so let's say we imagine it has some potential, this, and the field is rolling. So you can reach pretty strong conclusions about the scalar field if you just look at its, let's just look at its equation of motion, plus higher order terms. So I'm imagining just looking at the leading term in the Taylor expansion about wherever the field sits today. And so already you can say, so of course this is just the equation for a damped harmonic oscillator. It's damped by the expansion of the universe, and it's driven by its own potential. And then you can make pretty simple arguments for how this mass relates to the Hubble parameter. If this mass of the scalar were much less than Hubble today, then this field will be overdamped and it would just be essentially frozen wherever it is, barely rolling. So the equation of state in this case would be unmeasurably close to minus one. You wouldn't see any deviation. On the other hand, if the mass is much bigger than Hubble, then the field will be rolling pretty rapidly. And so again, the equation of state would be close to minus one. So the only case that you can have approximately but not equal to minus one is if the mass of the scalar is incredibly tiny to be an order of Hubble today, which is whatever, n minus 30 to be back on Hubble. Okay. So what this tells you, as far as local tests are concerned, is that this field will be essentially massless in our neighborhood, in a solar system or in a laboratory. And then you hit a bunch of very important constraints. This field, if it couples to matter, would mediate some force between particles of mass m1 and m2, which would be approximately 1 over r. The potential would be 1 over r locally. And then you hit some constraints, for example, just by solar system measurements. So assuming these data would be all the same for all different species, just solar system tests, like time delay experiments, the constraint is to be less than 10 to the minus 2. And equivalence principle, if these data are not the same for different species, the constraint is even higher at 10 to the minus 4. So the bottom line is that basically, these global constraints, if they're directly translatable to local constraints, they become very tight. So the message, so why what I'm going to talk about is a little different, is that there are two key assumptions that I made in this argument. And one was that this mass of the scalar cosmologically is the same as the one in the solar system. Okay, that basically, you know, the field is nearly massless locally. And also, I conversely stated that if beta is very small locally, therefore it's also small cosmologically. So the point here that I want to make is that this does not have to be the case. Okay, so in these theories, in the theories I'm going to talk about, in these chameleon theories, what we're going to find is that the mass of the chameleon is a function of the local density. And also, its coupling is also a function of the density. So this will be the key feature of these theories. So the point is that here, the local environment is highly dense, so this field will have a large mass. By the time you get to the cosmos, it can have a much smaller mass. The mechanism is pretty simple. Let's just, if you consider just a normal scalar field coupled to gravity, you have a gravitational sector, you consider a canonically normalized scalar field with some potential, and we're going to have some collection of matter fields. So the point is that these matter fields psi don't have to couple all to the same metric g that sits here. They can follow excitations of these fields can follow geodesics of any metric or whatever metric that I've labeled by gi, where I labeled all the different matter fields. So in principle, so for the purpose of this talk, well, we can assume that these different metrics g mu I are related to the Einstein-Fremd metric, which is this guy, by some conformal transformation for simplicity. Like this. Okay. And for all the purpose of this talk, phi will always be small compared to M prime. So we can just, for simplicity, approximate this by just some linear correction. Okay. Now for this potential, the key feature of the potential this work was mainly motivated by dark energy models like quintessence. So we imagine some potential that starts steep and falls off to very small slope. These are called tracker potentials in the quintessence literature. But it's pretty general. All you need is that you have some phase of the potential space which is quite steep and slow, and some other region which is much smaller slope. So for example, the kind of potential we have in mind for the scalar is, so for example, some inverse following. If you work out the equation of motion for the scalar, if you vary that action, you'll find that it satisfies just the usual wave equation coupled to this potential. But now, because of this phi dependence that sits everywhere in the matter sector, in here, you're also going to get source by the matter itself. you're going to get terms that are, so the corrections will be of the form summation over all the matter species that you have times beta I over n plus, and your exponential dependence here. Find the trace of the set energy tensor for each of these matter species. Okay, so the point is that in vacuum, where this would be zero, the field would want to do whatever it wants to do, so roll off to large values of phi and follow some cosmological solutions. But in the presence of the matter, in the presence of density, instead, so the way to think about this is that phi follows a potential, which is an effective potential. You can think of this right-hand side as a derivative of some effective potential. And by the way, so for concreteness, I'm going to just consider non-relativistic matter. So this will just be the energy density of whatever species I'm discussing here. So that this effective potential is just the sum of the potential itself plus a density-dependent term, which is just the sum over all the species times the exponential times the density of each species. So this is the key. This is the key result. So if you like, the second term to the effective potential, which is proportional to the density, we can draw it here, and we'll assume that the slope are such that this will be the term which is proportional to rho to the 4 beta phi, like this. And the slope is such that these two together actually give you some effective minimum at some finite value phi. Yes.
The stress tensor there is defined with respect to violation.
Okay, very good. So I wasn't completely careful. So this one is defined with respect to the metric that GI that sits in the matter action. And then how you define the coefficients here, or 4 beta, or whatever, that's it. It doesn't change any in the conclusions, but I think this is correct. Yeah, so basically you see that, so in the presence of density, the field doesn't want to roll off to infinity, but rather it wants to sit at some finite value finite sitting here. And the key point is that it has a mass, okay, which in principle can be much larger than whatever mass it would have should it just roll freely to large values. And you can clearly see that that this mass actually depends on the density quite clearly, and you can just draw a picture of this. This is the normal potential, and let's consider two different densities. So as I crank up the density, this exponential goes up, and a much lower density would give you some contribution like this. So at very high density, you get a very shallow minimum, and at very low density, you get some much, sorry, you get very narrow minimum and shallow minimum. Sorry. And so that you can see that the mass is some growing function of density.
In terms of strength compared to gravity, is this always weaker than gravity or by?
Very good question, yes. So so in the bare Lagrangian, so these betas, we assume at least the natural expectation is that there will be order unity, which means the scalar mediates a force, at least in vacuum, which would be order of gravitational strength. But people have played with so MOTA and collaborators, they've considered values of beta 10 to the 8, 10 to the some crazy values. Yes?
You said, well, to do that expansion, you have beta phi divided by plant mass to be small.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's one of those phi is the one of plant mass.
Is that again? If
phi.
Yes.
Plant mass.
Yeah, so
it's. And so now you said beta is 41 as well. Something with the expansion.
So in practice, what we'll see is that because of this effect, that the field wants to be trapped at the minimum, effective minimum of the potential, generally, for, except perhaps cosmologically today, this field value will be much less than M1. So you're right, if at cosmological distances eventually reaches M1, then the expansion breaks down.
These fields just make the dark energy. You don't have any other fields.
This scalar is dark energy, yes.
Yes, it has no relation to inflation. We cannot
explain. No. No. So yeah, you cannot. So inflation that would be, so this mass scale here, it turns out it has to be pretty small to satisfy a constraint. So it cannot be the inflation. So the mass dependence on the density, if you work it out, I won't work out the details, but it's pretty simple. You just minimize the effective potential, work out the second derivative of the potential. So this mass, which is the second derivative of the effective potential, at this value, depends on the density as some power. So for this potential here, it's the n plus 2 over n plus 1. This is how it depends on the density. So if you like, the physics is that, yeah, the physics is basically that we're exploiting the fact that the local density is 30 orders of magnitude larger than the cosmological density. So we're getting a huge hierarchy in quantum wavelengths using the existing large hierarchy in densities in our universe.
So it was n?
Yeah, sorry, n is, so n is this exponent in the inverse power law. So for more general potential, you can the calculation generalize. So are there a question?
I didn't understand why it could be inflates on.
The argument is that this is a tiny mass scale. And so the region where the potential would be flat would be way too low an energy scale for it to drive inflation. Of course, you can run up somewhere here, but then it's way too steep.
Okay. Yeah. But then you can make it flat, right? It's a potential, you can do whatever.
Yeah. Very good. Any other suggestions?
So I have a question about I forgot to mention it, but about the fluctuations on this field generated by other large.
Ah, very good. So it turns out, what turns out that happens is that the mass of this field is much larger than Hubble during inflation.
Really?
Yes. So it doesn't fluctuate. What really happens is it comes, as inflation happens, it's driven to its minimum, and then
because we assume that there is a bear, it also couples to inflation.
Oh, yeah, and so, so I'm assuming quite democratically, it couples to everything.
It doesn't couple to inflation.
Ah, yeah,
then it pushed God knows where, right?
Yes, exactly. That's right. Okay.
So the idea is that it's something more like a delta.
That's right. And the key selling point is that much like the dilaton in some sense, its couplings, these betas, don't have to be the same for different matter fields. Because we're not faced with the usual, you're not faced with the usual Kuhn's principle constraints.
So if not for, if you didn't choose that specific potential, what's the general characteristic that we should have?
That's a good question. So later on, I'll give you some simpler potentials like quartic, so you can do much simpler potentials. The key characteristic, as far as I can tell, is that you need to have some range of slopes in the potential, so that it's steep in some regions and gets flat. That's what. And then the actual scale in it, there's always has to be a scale which is reasonably small.
So it's both the changing of the second derivative, but
also the first. Yes. So that large density pushes you further up. Okay. So this is just a statement that the quantum wavelength of the field is changing with density, but for a less obvious reason, these couplings beta are also functions, effective functions of the density. Okay, effectively. Okay, so here's why. So this is because of what we refer to as this thin shell effect. Thin shell mechanism. So, again, this is basic physics, but let's consider some spherical source, okay? And let's calculate what the potential is outside this source for this scalar field. What would be the profile of phi measured at this place? Normally, when we talk about Newtonian gravity or Coulomb potential, so linear theory, what you do is you just sum up or integrate over all volume elements of this spherical source. Each of them gives you some contribution to the potential proportional to this infinitesimal volume element, goes as 1 over r. I'm going to assume there's no mass outside, so just goes as 1 over r. And then you sum up all these different volume elements, and at the end of the day, you get that the potential out here will go as a total mass times beta over the inverse distance from the center. Okay. Here what happens, however, is that, so although the mass can be 0 outside, this is a dense object. So that the mass inside the objects, if you take some volume element well inside the core, here the mass is quite large. Okay. The mass of the scalar. So very nearby the volume element, the flux is exponentially suppressed. So these volume elements well inside the core don't contribute anything to the potential outside. Okay. So this is true of all volume elements except those that reside sufficiently close to the surface. So there's some thin shell just below the surface of the object whose volume elements, the flux can escape, so to speak, and generate a 1 over r contribution to the exterior potential. So in these models, when you work out what the potential is outside some object, you'll find generally that it's going to be proportional to beta times the mass times 1 over r, and perhaps some exponential from whatever mass that the field has outside. So there's going to be some extra suppression, which is this thin shell factor. Let's say r is the radius of the object, and the thin shell has delta r thickness. So there is this extra suppression of delta r over r. And if you work it out, this delta r over r turns out to be some simple combination of the difference phi outside, or is phi inside, where these values of phi are those corresponding to the interior and exterior densities. Those are the values of phi that minimize the potential, in principle, for, let's say, the interior density and the exterior density. And this is the Newtonian potential difference between the inside of the object and the outside. Yeah. So physically, all it means is the following. The point is that if this is much less than 1, then the object has this thin shell. Obviously, if this ratio with this combination is not much less than 1, if it's order unity, then there's no thin shell, and what you get is just the usual linear answer that the full potential will be proportional to beta period no suppression. Physically, what's going on? So why this ratio? What you're trying to do is you're trying to set up some field gradients. So here the potential, so phi has some value here, and you're trying to give it some different value inside the object. And so clearly, whether you're able to do this or not, will have to do with how big this difference is. The smaller the difference, the easier it is. So the smaller the thin shell. And also, if you make the object bigger and bigger, the easier it is for the object to sustain this gradient difference. Okay. That's why it goes as 1 over the Newtonian potential. If you make the object very, very small, at some point it becomes energetically disfavorable to set up this gradient in phi within the object. Okay, so large objects like the Earth, the Moon, the Sun, it's easy for them to have this thin shell. But if you take a baseball or whatever, it may not have a thin shell. Okay. Moreover, and this is key, because it's because it has to do with the difference in phi between the exterior and the interior, let's consider something of fixed density, like a baseball. Let's suppose this is a baseball here. Okay. Clearly, the baseball, if you stick it in a dense environment, this gradient between the interior value and the exterior value will be smaller, because the difference in densities is smaller. So the baseball, it's easier for it to have a thin shell if you stick it in the atmosphere. But if you stick it in space, then this, you know, the density in space is tiny. This gradient in field is much larger, and then the baseball no longer has a thin shell. So what this means in practice? It's scatter, so it's talking about hockey plots. So in practice, what this means is if you stick, if you look at the force, if you can measure the force, gravitational force, between two test masses, if you do it in the laboratory, then these test masses will generally have this thin shell suppression. So the extra force compared to gravity, the force you apply, will go as beta squared, okay, over r squared, times the mass of these guys, times the thin shell suppression to the second power, which will suppress this force compared to gravity. But if you do it in space, then you just get this answer. With no suppression.
Isn't that an extra exponential because there's a mass?
Yeah, so that's right. Exactly. But it turns out, in practice, both in vacuum and in space, the exponential is the field is nearly maxless for the purpose of these experiments. But you're right. And so I just, for simplicity, I consider it to be 1 over r squared. And since beta is of order unity, this would say that G Newton in space can be order unity different between test masses than it is in the laboratory.
So Richard, are we talking about the atmosphere? Is that the effect? Or that's your density? Or
so, yeah.
Because that's really a minor effect with respect to the balls. The weight of the atmosphere is very low.
No, it's the force between the two masses themselves.
Yes.
Okay, but it is suppressed by the fact that within the atmosphere, this field has a different profile. This mediator.
Yeah.
By this mediator.
So you better stick them in the liquids, in dense liquids.
No, that will make the force weaker. Even. So you want to stick these balls in a very low density environment. Because if you stick them in a low density environment, it's very hard for them to create this gradient which suppresses the force by the thin shell. So, there are these experiments which also for equivalence principle violations, the current constraint is that this delta A over A, this relative difference in acceleration, has to be less than 10 to the 1 part of 10 to the 13. From laboratory.
No, it's not from laboratory. I think it's, we discussed as much. It's from comparison of fall of moon and earth to the sun.
Yeah, there's both. Yeah.
In laboratory, it's few orders of magnitude worse.
I don't think so. They watch it this value as well.
We can print out the moon's review from PDG and have a look.
I mean, so I'm pretty sure it watches minus 13.
Yeah.
Just by. But you're right, there's also some solar system free fall. So here it is for the same reason. If you do this, if you measure the force between one of these test masses and the Earth, locally you can easily satisfy this constraint because everything, both the Earth and the test mass, have thin shells. But if you go to space, it's possible that you would find violations of this greater than 10 to the minus 13.
So can you also compare kind of clocks in space and on Earth? I mean, are we going to be different?
Yeah, you could in principle.
Well, people here would be very much interested to know what they
are. So frankly, that was 4 years ago, whatever. Because I'm very interested to talk to people about this. But back in the days, the tightest constraint was from this, what is called Dessel-Levine experiment. They flew some clock at 10 to the 4 kilometers, and they looked at the change in redshift from such a force. But maybe now they're, I don't know, yeah, in principle. Yeah, so this would be a constraint.
May I come back to this atmosphere issue?
Yes.
So, I mean, if there's no atmosphere, there is no effect. And if it's very high density, it also doesn't work. So there must be an optimum then in the density.
If there is no density, the effect is maximal. Yeah, in vacuum. If you build a sufficiently big large vacuum chamber, then there is no such suppression.
Yeah, so you have space value.
You could build a kilometer sized vacuum chamber on Earth, it would also work. But in a small vacuum chamber, I can tell you why it doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't.
Well, what about like LIGO, where they have like a really long tube?
That's interesting, yeah.
No, I think you need all dimensions to do long tube.
Yeah, that's possibly true. I have to think about this. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe you could stick. Okay, so there are satellites that will measure violation of the equivalence principle, and the accuracy is much better than NMIS-13. So for them, these would be like strong signals. I'm running a lot out of time. I'm just going to describe one more model, and then I'll show you some results, experimental results. Not my experimental one. So going back a bit to what Fedor was asking, so forget about dark energy and this dark energy motivated potential. These theories have some nice experimental signatures, and you can find a very simple toy model. Just consider I'm gonna call it gamma, the phi to the fourth potential. And again, so this effective potential, there's some term due to coupling through the density suppressed by Angelon. So phi to the fourth potential by itself, of course, looks like this. But then because of this natural term from coupling to the density, you get some coupling due to the density, and together creates some effective minimum and some mass. So the same story applies here. Exactly, qualitatively is exactly the same, just with a phi to the fourth potential. And what's cute about this potential is if you calculate this mass, the mass of the chameleon as a function of the density, depending on where it's sitting, turns out that it's given by minus the third and some power to density, like this. So the higher the density, the smaller the range. And interestingly, if you put these values, couplings of gravitational strength and phi to the fourth coupling, to the order unity, and you stick that the density, let's say 1 gram per centimeter cubed, which is roughly the local density, you find that indeed this range is of order 0.1 millimeter for phi to the fourth potential. So it's pure numerical coincidence that with such a potential, you manage to get the range that is correct for local experiments.
Thank you. I tried it before, it's a perfectly innocent potential.
It's
that normalization, right? But if you go to the gravitational normalization where it's dimensionless phi, then m Planck to the 4 appears in front of the phi to the 4, right? You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
right? Sorry, I was blanking out there again. If I go to the same normalization as, say, the potential dimensionless phi.
Yes. Yeah, then you're going
to
have
to the four, well,
which looks like a tiny coefficient. Yeah.
No, it's all be a huge coefficient. So the phi to the four term will contain, a huge potential. So it's.
Okay.
How much time do you need?
5 minutes.
Okay.
I just want to show some plots. So let me just flash a couple of experimental results. So basically, to detect this chameleon in a lab, in a laboratory, first you have to overcome the fact that in a dense environment, the range is short. Okay, so you want to basically bring your test masses very close to each other. And you also have to overcome this thin shell suppression. The fact that if you use big enough masses, you're suppressed by a thin shell effect. So you need to have small test masses. So an ideal experiment is the Edwash experiment. And what Edwash basically does, in a nutshell, is it takes two plates, basically, with holes in them. And the bottom plate is being rotated. The top plate is free. It's tied to a fiber, and such that as the plate rotates, if the holes are overlapping, there's no torque. But as the bottom, if the holes start rotating, then you have a torque on the upper plate. So they measure this oscillatory torque because of the rotation of the bottom plate. And then subtracting out, if you like, the Newtonian component, you get some leftover torque. That's what you're constraining. That was the old experiment with fewer holes. The latest experiment they've done was with 42 holes. That's this one. And a future experiment will use a nicer geometry made out of wedges being cut. So we actually... So we actually worked out, so numerically, not me, but I'm all... worked out for this 5^4 story numerically. So these are holes, if you like, or wedges. And you're going to measure, you're going to calculate the torque as they move past one another. Okay. So initially, the torque peaks. Okay, you want your pull back, this guy is being pulled back this way. Eventually, it drops off. When they're far enough separated, the force, the chameleon force, is dropping off with distance. Okay. And in reality, as this guy moves this way, eventually it's going to come close to the other hole, which is going to start pulling it this way. So the torque, if you like, in reality goes up, then becomes negative when you start being pulled by the other hole. So we calculated it. So for the 42 hole configuration, this is indeed the torque as a function of angle for various separation, various parameters, etc. And also for the wedge. And the Adelberger group went ahead and they constrained this chameleon potential. So this is exactly this parameter.
They have vacuum chambers?
Yes, they have a vacuum chamber. That's right. This is done in vacuum. So again, this parameter gamma and beta. So this is the extruded region they've managed to extrude. In particular.
Are there strong requirements in your kind of model? I mean,
you mean what happens in vacuum with the field?
What is the good macro in this sense? Like when we start
it doesn't matter all that much because as soon as you drop down much below atmospheric density, whatever, right? Then what the field does is it goes to a value such that the Compton wavelength within the chamber is of the order of the size of the chamber. But you don't have to go just a few orders of magnitude below atmospheric pressure. Okay, so this is, in particular, they ruled out this part of the region space where these parameters are of order unity, which is kind of interesting. And then this other experiment, whose results should appear soon, is the Gannett experiment at Fermilab. And here they constrain the coupling of the chameleon. You can also couple it to f mu squared, so basically a fine structure constant dependence on phi. And the experiment is one of those photon to whatever conversion experiments. But the idea is the following. Okay, you have some vacuum chamber, cylindrical vacuum chamber, and you shoot a laser down it, and it has windows at both ends. So the photons go through, and you stick a magnetic field on this chamber. So what happens is that because of this coupling, in the presence of a B field, there are photon chameleon oscillations. The photons go through. Now the chameleon inside the chamber, as I was saying, is massless. But once it hits, but within the window, it's massive. So what happens when the chameleon, if you have a conversion of photon to chameleon, when the chameleon hits the window, it bounces up, doesn't go through the window. So if you just shoot this laser long enough, you're going to build up these chameleon, this gas of chameleon particles inside the chamber. At some point, you turn off your laser, and you just wait for these chameleon particles to turn into photons. They go through the window, and you measure them in a photo slider.
Sorry.
What's the time scale?
I mean, this is,
they integrate for an hour. For
this is really not for normalized order of Planck, right? If you made it as order one, this would be only for
they get
5 GeV or something.
They have to have a much smaller scale. No, but still, it's, I mean, whatever. I don't care.
Sure.
Somebody's doing experiments to train my model. I don't care what the parameters are.
You started by saying that this is kind of a gravitational interaction. Right? This would be
so, in this case, the constraints are probably boring, so beta has to be very large, as you said.
Yeah.
Fine. I agree. So, that's it. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Maybe we could ask now more general questions and more technical questions could be asked during the lunch. So since we're probably during the lunch, so.
Well, I'm sorry, I have a question which is those people, but anyway, these small scale gravitational experiments, as far as I understand, they have a little bit of gold foil.
Yes.
Masses.
Exactly.
And if you go to a region of extremely large coupling to matter, this could give you some sort of shielding.
That's right.
These guys, Moten, Shaw, they're very strongly coupled chameleon scenarios.
Exactly, it becomes suppressed. So indeed, that's also what we were finding. And I didn't show the numerical, but at some point, as you crank up, the foil starts suppressing the force because you're being shielded by the foil.
I guess it would be extremely difficult to do any of these meaningful experiments without this foil because then you have all the electromagnetic.
No, I'm not saying dig it up, but I'm saying there's a mag, if you like, there's some beta range which is for which the foil is irrelevant, and as you crank up beta, at some point it becomes relevant.
So what are these blue lines?
They're windows, whatever.
No, this blue line, so it's still
this. These blue lines, Yeah, so photons oscillate the chameleons.
But in this case, is it the easiest experiment to detect if you believe that chameleons interact with the walls? If these particles interact with the walls, I think we have many other opportunities to study them.
Yeah, so fair enough. Yeah, as Maxim was saying, there's longer constraints.
I would just expect that if the photons could turn to some particles which could go through walls.
Right.
And in this case, we have no chance to detect them.
Right.
And if they are light enough, they go nearly with the velocity of light.
You also have probably a very serious solar lifetime constraints.
If you create tremendous value solar.
Yeah. Because you will start losing energy from the solar for this.
But the sun is very massive, so I don't know.
So?
I don't know.
But you're producing, you're not exchanging the long-range particles, you're producing KV scale mass particles, the KV scale energy particles. So,
yeah, that's fair enough. Maybe they're
I have a simple question from an experimentalist. I enjoyed the talk because I understood, could follow most of it. Right at the end when you put up this experiment and said you put a magnetic field on and you're changing photons to chameleons, that sort of, to me, came out of the blue. Why the magnetic field? Are these like axions or something?
So the principle is the same. So these experiments also constrain axions. So because of this coupling of phi to electromagnetic sector, if you turn on a B field, then you are inducing, if you have a background B field, then you are inducing oscillations between it's very similar to axion conversion, photon axion conversion.
But still, if you like to have reflection of these purified particles from the walls, it could have some other couplings.
Yes, it's not just coupled to ENM, it's coupled in this fashion. And then your point, if I understood it, that you'll have stronger constraints from these other from these other couplings.
Has anyone bothered to sit down and have a look at what kind of variations of couplings you can have?
Everybody, so
cosmology or from, you know, on the orbit, between the orbit and
so
the Earth and
yeah. So I did it in this model. In this model, much like you, what you were saying to me, so it turned out to be too small when you plugged in other constraints and Boolean principle. Again, I was trying to at the time I was interested in explaining this 10^-5, you know, absorption cloud, I mean alpha absorption cloud with a spatial variation as opposed to. But we found that because the density of these clouds is not too different from the galactic density locally, you didn't have much room.
But what about the evolution of the quintessence itself? Well, it's small.
Yeah,
it's
very good.
Evolving.
It's always small. The variation in Planck units is small. So
late time, there is almost no evolution.
Right.
And W is also minus 1.
Yes, W is minus. Goes very close.
Yes. What how do you choose the frequency of the laser?
I don't know. It's so realistic experiments that discuss details. It's just
no
stuff.
No, I'm sorry. I really have no idea.
So I cannot imagine an exotic particle weakly coupled to matter for which the wall is less transparent than for photon. Photon can go through, the particle cannot.
Its
interaction could be stronger than electromagnetic interaction.
Can you use other frequencies? I mean, is there are you going to be like the axion guys and put different frequency?
You're saying well, the constraints depend on frequency.
Yeah, it has to. And one of the most likely frequencies.
That's a very good question.
Wouldn't this happen also for semi photons, for instance?
Yes, that's a
this has been looked at because of the sort of ambient plasma density, you suppress